The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Volume 1, by Victor Hugo. Book First, Chapter 1, The Grand Hall. 348 years, 6 months, and 19 days ago today, the Parisians awoke to the sound of all the bells in the triple circuit of the city, the university, and the town ringing a full peal. The 6th of January, 1482, is not, however, a day of which history has preserved the memory. There was nothing notable in the event which thus set the bells and the bourgeois of Paris in a ferment from early morning. It was neither an assault by the Picards nor the Burgundians, nor a hunt led along in procession, nor a revolt of scholars in the town of Loos, nor an entry of our much dread lord, Monsieur the King, nor even a pretty hanging of male and female thieves by the courts of Paris. Neither was it the arrival, so frequent in the 15th century, of some plumed and bedizened embassy. It was barely 2 days since the last cavalcade of that nature, that of the Flemish ambassadors charged with concluding the marriage between the Dauphin and Marguerite of Flanders, had made its entry into Paris, to the great annoyance of M., le Cardinal de Bourbon, who, for the sake of pleasing the king, had been obliged to assume an amiable mien towards this whole rustic rabble of Flemish burgomasters, and to regale them at his Hotel de Bourbon with a very pretty morality, allegorical satire, and farce, while a driving rain drenched the magnificent tapestries at his door. What put the whole population of Paris in commotion, as Jehan de Troyes expresses it, on the 6th of January, was the double solemnity, united from time immemorial, of the Epiphany and the Feast of Fools. On that day, there was to be a bonfire on the Place de Grève, a maypole at the Chapelle de Braque, and a mystery at the Palais de Justice. It had been cried, to the sound of the trumpet, the preceding evening at all the crossroads, by the provost's men, clad in handsome, short, sleeveless coats of violet camelot, with large white crosses upon their breasts. So the crowd of citizens, male and female, having closed their houses and shops, thronged from every direction, at early morn, towards some one of the three spots designated. Each had made his choice. One, the bonfire. Another, the maypole. Another, the mystery play. It must be stated, in honor of the good sense of the loungers of Paris, that the greater part of this crowd directed their steps towards the bonfire, which was quite in season, or towards the mystery play, which was to be presented in the grand hall of the Palais de Justice, the courts of law, which was well roofed and walled, and that the curious left the poor, scantily flowered maypole to shiver all alone beneath the sky of January, in the cemetery of the chapel of Braque. The populace thronged the avenues of the law courts in particular, because they knew that the Flemish ambassadors, who had arrived 2 days previously, intended to be present at the representation of the mystery and at the election of the Pope of the Fools, which was also to take place in the Grand Hall. It was no easy matter on that day to force one's way into that Grand Hall, although it was then reputed to be the largest covered enclosure in the world. It is true that Sauval had not yet measured the Grand Hall of the Chateau of Montargis. The palace place, encumbered with people, offered to the curious gazers at the windows the aspect of a sea, into which five or six streets, like so many mouths of rivers, discharged every moment fresh floods of heads. The waves of this crowd, augmented incessantly, dashed against the angles of the houses which projected here and there, like so many promontories, into the irregular basin of the place. In the center of the lofty Gothic asterisk facade of the palace, the grand staircase, incessantly ascended and descended by a double current, which, after parting on the intermediate landing place, flowed in broad waves along its lateral slopes, the grand staircase, I say, trickled incessantly into the place, like a cascade into a lake. The cries, the laughter, the trampling of those thousands of feet produced a great noise and a great clamor. From time to time, this noise and clamor redoubled. The current which drove the crowd towards the grand staircase flowed backwards, became troubled, formed whirlpools. This was produced by the buffet of an archer, or the horse of one of the provost's sergeants, which kicked to restore order, an admirable tradition which the provostship has bequeathed to the constabulary to the marechaussee to our gendarmerie of Paris. Asterisk the word Gothic, in the sense in which it is generally employed, is wholly unsuitable, but wholly consecrated. Hence, we accept it and we adopt it like all the rest of the world to characterize the architecture of the second half of the Middle Ages, where the ogive is the principle which succeeds the architecture of the first period, of which the semicircle is the father. Thousands of